This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalby Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
Hello, I'm Josh, and I'm here with Emily Drabik-Maunder from the University of Cardiff, who is going to tell us, hopefully, a bit about what she does. So, hello, Emily.
Hi.
Hi. So, you're from Cardiff. You work in the formation of habitable planets, I believe. Is that is correct, yes?
Yes, yeah, that's correct. So, I do look at the formation of planets, and I'm specifically an observational astronomer. So, I use submillimeter and radio telescopes all around the world in order to look at how planets form.
Okay, so let's start at the basics then. How, with the most general question I suppose we could ask, how does a planet form?
So a planet actually begins to form around a star when the star actually begins to form. So when the star is very, very young, it has this thick layer of dust and molecular gas in orbit around it. And over time, it's this disk of material that ends up forming into a planetary system. So not just planets, but also moons and asteroids and comets and everything we see in our own solar system. So we think that a rocky planet begins to form by the tiniest of dust grains. So most people don't really think that dust is very interesting or important in space, but actually these tiny dust grains over time will accumulate, and so they stick together, and they'll form kind of larger rocks, kind of like pebble-sized or centimeter-sized particles.
Sorry, when you say dust, what exactly are you talking about? I assume it's not like household dust.
Household dust, exactly. So this kind of dust is kind of like bits of carbon and bits of silicon. So they're just kind of almost like grains of sand, but in space, that's made out of carbon and silicon and iron and things along those lines.
Okay, so where do these dust grains come from? Because I thought they were created in the stars. So is there a particular type of star that is more likely to have these grains around it?
No, so when any star begins to form, so it's just that this dust and gas is scattered throughout space. So the dust and molecular gas got there from early stars exploding, so supernovae, and that kind of scattered material all throughout our galaxy. And so now the stars that we see forming all form from this dust and molecular gas that's just scattered through space.
Okay, so you gave a seminar here, actually, yesterday.
Yes.
So that was very, very interesting, actually.
Thank you.
One of the questions that I had and also came up at the time was, what sort of solar systems are we expecting to find? And how do we know that these are the ones that are typical or atypical? So, for instance, our solar system, we think is maybe typical, but...
So our solar system actually seems to be atypical when we take a look at exoplanets throughout our galaxy. For example, the Kepler Space Telescope has been able to find over 3,500 exoplanets scattered throughout our galaxy in a variety of different solar systems. So there might be multiple exoplanets in the solar system, or there may only be one planet in orbit around the star. So in general, when we look at these other planetary systems, our planetary system seems relatively atypical just because we have eight planets in orbit around our sun. However, at this point in time, you know, we still have a lot to learn, and we're still searching for lots of the exoplanets that is in our galaxy. So there will be a lot of them that we've actually missed in the process. And that's just because it's very difficult to find an exoplanet. So, for example, we have to look at the motion of the star. So if an exoplanet is close enough to a star, it will actually cause the star to wobble. Or we need to be able to see the exoplanet transiting in front of the star so that the star's brightness will actually dip down when that planet blocks out the light from the star. So I do think that there's a lot of exoplanets that we still need to find kind of scattered throughout our galaxy in order to best look at if we are a typical sort of planetary system.
So in terms of how you actually then go about studying, so we know how to find the existing planets, but how do we find planets that are not quite formed yet? And so you were talking about measuring the size of dust grains. How do you do that from so far away?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. So dust will actually emit light. So when dust heats up in orbit around the star, it will actually glow, and we can see the light that's emitted by dust at different wavelengths. So for example, when we want to look at dust grains that are centimeters in size, so pebble-sized dust grains that indicate that dust is sticking together and beginning to form rocky planets, then what we do is look in radio wavelengths. So we use different radio telescopes, and so exactly like eMERLIN, so here in the UK, and Jodrell Bank Observatory, for
Shout
example.
Out, woo.
Yeah, exactly. And so essentially, these dust grains only emit light at wavelengths that's equivalent to its circumference. So, for example, when we're looking at a 1 centimeter dust grain, we need to look at wavelengths of light that is around 5 to 6 centimeters in wavelength. So those are the sorts of radio wavelengths that we're looking at.
Why is there some physical process that means that it's directly related to the circumference? Or?
It's just not very efficient at emitting a smaller wavelength than around its own size.
Oh, okay. But it's its circumference as opposed to its diameter.
Yeah, yeah. So it's proportional to its circumference, yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting facts. Yeah, so I study Jupiter-sized planets post-formation. And one thing that I'm still quite new to the field, and one thing that I'm kind of interested in is there any change in, is there a difference in formation between gas and ice giants and rocky terrestrial planets? Is that a thing that is noticeably different? Do you see different formation mechanisms going on in the same accretion disk, say?
Yes, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, for example, rocky planets will form from the accumulation of dust grains. Gas giant planets will form from some sort of accretion mechanism, and primarily out of gas as well. So you wouldn't necessarily expect a gas giant planet to form in the same way as a rocky exoplanet, yeah.
So can you see the formation of gas giants within these same, using the same techniques, or do you have to use some other different form of?
So you wouldn't necessarily want to look for dust in the case of gas giant exoplanets. So for example, ALMA's done a lot of work with looking at gas in disks, as well as doing a lot of work looking at dust as well, just at much smaller wavelengths. But one of the things that ALMA came out with, they actually found a disk with what looks like a protoplanet in the process of forming. And the reason why they think a protoplanet is forming is that there seems to be some sort of accretion stream onto that protoplanet or onto something in the disk that we can't really see. So in molecular gas, that you can see this kind of stream-like feature, and you know, at the very center is presumably a protoplanet that's just stealing some of the gas from the disk away from the star.
Okay, so is this the famous image of from ALMA of sort of like it's false color, I know, but like the red sort of concentric rings almost around?
No, so not quite. So the concentric rings show, so there's kind of these dark ring features in that particular disk. So I think it's HL Tau. And so that's showing that planets may actually be carving out space in the disk in both dust and gas. So there likely are planets in the process of forming. It's just carving out that material as it orbits the star. But this particular image, I can't think of the name, actually. I can't remember the name of the star, but so it's showing these accretion streams, just a sort of stream in the disk itself, kind of in a region that doesn't seem to have any other material other than the stream kind of penetrating the disk cavity. And then presumably there's a protoplanet in the center. Yeah.
Excellent. That sounds really interesting, actually. There's every now and again there's sort of like a topic that I go, oh, maybe I should just jump ship and do that. This is one of those talks that your talk yesterday was like, I was just kind of watching it going, I can see the point of radio astronomy.
Yeah, exactly. Radio astronomy is very important for planet formation.
So if you're looking at, do you ever find yourself looking at sort of migration methods and trying to work out exactly how it is that the structure within a solar system actually forms itself? Because obviously we have kind of like a sort of weirdly regimented terrestrial gas giant, ice giant type situation.
Yeah.
Have you studied or are you aware of any research that's going on in that area?
So a lot of the research going on in the area will involve computer modeling, just because it is incredibly difficult to do that kind of study with observations, just because we can't look at these systems for millions of years, you know, to see where the exoplanets formed and how it's moved over time. However, one thing that PEBBLES is doing, which is a survey with eMERLIN, so the Planet Earth Building Blocks, a legacy eMERLIN survey, excellent acronym. So one of the things the survey is doing is looking at nearby disks and looking for the pebbles in these particular disks. And the idea is that we should be able to resolve pebbles that are forming at an equivalent of an Earth-Mars orbit from pebbles that are forming at a Jupiter orbit from pebbles that are forming at a Saturn orbit. And so the idea just in these very young planetary systems. So the idea is that we want to see kind of where the pebbles are forming, and then we can try to distinguish between different kind of formation mechanisms and even kind of look into if pebbles are forming further out, and thus if planets are forming further out away from the star, then perhaps it is likely that they are spiraling in towards the star at a later time, and perhaps that's how the rocky planets like Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars actually ended up forming. So that's something that we're looking into, but it's a very difficult thing to do, really.
Is it possible to trace the history of a particular planet? So if you're looking at, say, a hot Jupiter-type system, is it possible to just take that Jupiter and go backwards in its time, or are we having to look at different systems at different times and assume that we can just connect them?
I think that's a really good question. So kind of looking at the abundances of different molecules, you could theoretically test if, you know, if it's unlikely that a hot Jupiter, for example, would have formed very close in to its star in the first place, or if it would have formed out further and then spiraled in. So yeah, it's something that I think should be able to be done, but I'm not entirely sure kind of how to, you know, to go about really doing that. Yeah.
Fair enough. Have you got any, what are you expecting to find within the, how these structures form? Have you got a preferred hypothesis?
I do think, so just from what we've gotten so far with pebbles, so we only have the commissioning data so far of a source called DG Tau A. And so this is a very young star, so what I would call a protostar with a disk. And we've actually already been able to find pebbles in orbit around the star, and specifically quite a lot of pebbles at about all the way out to a Saturn orbit, so a Saturn equivalent orbit. So I do think that it seems to be that the planet formation mechanism, at least for rocky planets, seems to be this accumulation of dust grains. And kind of what I'm hoping to find out from this project is I'm hoping to see that all of the stars that we image do have a nominal amount of pebbles that are forming. And I think what would be really exciting is that if we were able to see pebbles forming at kind of an Earth and Mars orbit, and so that's kind of like being able to see an equivalent of an Earth or Mars forming in orbit around another star. So perhaps that could be what our own solar system looked like at one point in time, just billions of years ago, okay. Which is really exciting. So,
yeah, when you say an Earth or Mars equivalent or a Jupiter equivalent,
yeah.
Is that, are you talking actual physical distances, or are you talking relative to the size of the star, or?
No, I'm talking about physical distances.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, these are nearby, well, I say nearby objects. So they're anywhere from 120 to 230 parsecs away. So yeah, I'm just saying it in terms of relative distance.
Okay. Yeah. So, you've mentioned the Pebble survey. Could you tell us a little bit more about that? Any big upcoming events or things we should be watching out for?
Yeah. So the Pebble survey, like I said before, we do have commissioning data. And so we're about to come out with that paper probably early next year, I would say. And then the full survey is underway. So we were awarded over 400 hours of eMERLIN time, which is really exciting. And so that full survey should be underway either at the end of this year or early next year. So definitely stay tuned, and we'll see kind of if any other stars are in the process of forming planets.
Okay. Emily, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure.